From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Governor Brown calls his latest budget plan modest, fair, and temporary. And for now, he's avoiding more cuts to public schools in hopes that voters will approve the tax initiative that he's working on for the November ballot. Meanwhile, some hundreds of teachers in the Sacramento area are facing layoffs as districts try to shore up their budgets and anticipate what's ahead. Taking a look at this through the lens of one district, we have two guests in studio today. Glenn Thompson, superintendent of San Juan Unified School District, and Shannon Brown, president of the San Juan Teachers Association. Welcome to both of you to Insight.
Thank you. Good morning. Much.
So was it a surprise to be somewhat bypassed this week by the governor's revision plan?
Surprise, no, because it just validates the dire situation in California. It reinforced the message. And remember, let's put it in perspective. California continues to fund per pupil spending for education. We're ranked last in the nation now. And so this, again, while it's no surprise, I think it reinforces the importance of we must do business differently.
Let's define where we're at right now. We just mentioned teacher layoffs. Shannon, what's it look like from the teacher's perspective? Because we have now had 5 years of billion-dollar cuts to public funds.
Well, of course, it's demoralizing to continually have the same people get layoff notices. But I think the anger and the demoralization that people feel is really being directed at the fact that the legislators continue to not properly fund education. So, you know, we can move money around, but it's like rearranging the chairs on the Titanic. If the ship's going down because we don't have proper funding, then people know exactly where the responsibility lies.
There was a reprieve in December for mid-year cuts that could have happened because state revenues were a little bit higher. So the reprieve in December, the budget announcement this week where there's a hold on public funds, is that sending any kind of a statement to either of you?
I just think it reinforces the uncertainty of planning. What ends up happening, I think, because of the 5 years of cuts is this: we become in a reactive mindset. And I believe more than ever we have to collaborate and network together to really fund and think differently about educating for the 21st century. But when you're fighting over limited resources or there's this uncertainty, you never get to a proactive mindset. And that's been the work that we've been trying to do in San Juan. How do we think differently given this situation?
So what's the answer to that? What's the how?
Well, that's exactly why that we're here and we continue to go out and talk together. Number one, we don't always agree on everything from a labor management perspective. But what we do agree in, we must continue to have the conversation. You know, there's a saying, and I think it came from Adam Urbanski, who was a teacher union person in Rochester, New York, is if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And so if we're not talking together collectively around these issues and we spend all of our time fighting, how will we ever be able to come up with creative solutions for our students?
Well, I would actually like to add on to that, that, you know, a lot of people say, well, you can't just throw money at it. Well, when California is now near the bottom in what we spend per pupil, money is part of the problem. In fact, it's a huge part of the problem. So if you look at the top three performing states on the national on the NAEP, which is the National Assessment for Education Progress, the top three states spend between $16,000 and $22,000 per student. And in this state, we're spending below $5,000. And I don't think that's something the public gets to hear very often, because we're always being told, oh, it takes up 40% of the general fund. Well, while that's a large amount, the reason other states can spend more is because they are funding education through different avenues. And that's part of the doing business differently that we have to come to terms with as a state is educating our students, which are our future in this country. Is it a priority or is it not? And you put your resources where your priorities are.
So what are those out-of-the-box suggestions? Because you're facing trigger cuts if the initiative doesn't pass in January of another $5.5 billion. If it's approved, great. There's a 16% increase in funding. But if not, where's the out-of-the-box?
San Juan is, unlike many districts, one of the things that we've done is created a community-based strategic plan. We always talk about budgeting the plan, not planning a budget. Mm. And so we have a very myopic focus on where we're going in terms of instruction, in terms of teaching and learning. And so for us, it's really about having those collaborative conversations around the work that needs to happen in classrooms every day. But I want to reinforce, if we don't bring our practitioners to the table and learn with them and from them, the situation will only be exacerbated.
You're listening to Superintendent Glenn Thompson, who is new officially on the job as of May 1st, even though you've been with the district and acting for that time period. And you just said practitioner, and that's a key word for Shannon Brown, who's head of the San Juan Teachers Association, because I know Shannon has said specifically practitioners need to be making the job happen. What do you mean by that?
Well, if you look at education policy, compared to what happens in most professions. In most professions, the professionals dictate what happens in that area. With education, we have legislators and non-classroom teachers making decisions about what should happen at the instructional level. And everyone goes back to the research that the teacher's one of the most important elements in student achievement. Well, then why are we constantly being bypassed in the conversation about what our students need? So what we do in San Juan is we have joint conversations. We bring in classroom teachers and we say, what do you need? What kind of resources do you need? What kind of support do you need to help students learn? So that it's not always this top-down approach where, you know, if you're looking for compliance, then you're not going to be looking at people having hard conversations around how to improve instructional practice, which ultimately benefits students.
But here's a tricky question. You both come from backgrounds in teaching. And Superintendent, your background was in Los Angeles Unified for 20 years.
20-plus years.
You're hands-on in the classroom. And on the other hand, we're talking about finances. Versus somebody that has the numbers background and knows how to apply the finances. Are you having to put all those skills and deal with all those issues in your basket and try to protect the classroom when maybe somebody needs to just be protecting the budget?
Well, I think you surround yourself with an amazing team, and we have that in San Juan. But let me back up for a minute. I did spend many years in a classroom. I'm very proud of that. I also spent many years as an instructional leader at school sites in L.A. I think whether you're in a classroom, whether you're working with teachers or as principal or in a district office, you have to think about systems and how systems work. Mm-hmm. We're very good in public education about fragmenting the way kids learn. Every 50 minutes, we go to a different subject. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do now is look holistically at everything. And especially in this time of fiscal crisis, we have to look at things differently. And so, yeah, while there's someone protect, and trust me, in San Juan, SCOE is mandated, you know, you're going to watch your budget no matter what. We do that. But this is an opportunity for us to think very differently about how we fund priorities in San Juan.
How much are you looking at that tax initiative with hope? Or planning for the just in case it doesn't pass?
Well, as Superintendent mentioned, SCOE has required us to budget worst case scenario. So those numbers are going to have to be in place. But I want to quickly go back to something else you said about, you know, should someone be watching the budget while we're protecting the classroom? And the reason we have a budget is because of the classroom. So I think that a lot of times we try to separate those two, and the resources are allocated precisely for us to be able to serve students. So if we're not prioritizing serving students, then we're in the wrong business.
Yeah, you understand my question was about, are they in conflict with each other? The goals of the classroom compared to the funds that are there to support it.
Well, under the current funding model, absolutely,
yes.
Because we want a world-class education
right.
system at Walmart prices. And, I mean, the reality is that makes it really challenging for us. But we do continue to talk about making sure we're looking at the classroom and students and how we best provide services to them even during this economic crisis.
And let's just remember that never before in my lifetime or in our lifetime, the levels of the variables that we're seeing come into our classrooms are amazing to me. The number of students living in poverty that are now attending schools in California at an all-time high, yet we're continue to underfund education. And if you read some papers, we want the teacher and the principal to do everything, be everything to all kids. Well, that comes at a price. And so how do we rethink education? We see this as an opportunity to really think differently. But again, it gets to your point, Beth. We can't react to this uncertainty. And that is where we are right now. We're still operating in uncertain times.
Do you prefer one of the tax initiatives to the other, Molly Munger's versus the governor's?
Well, you know, in an ideal world, you think, well, we want both to pass.
Or at least
they're
one.
Both, both, right?
Exactly.
But the governor's initiative is a priority because they're attached to that is a dramatic cut to schools. So for one initiative to pass, we'd want it to be the governor's. Complication occurs if both passes because if two initiatives pass that address the same issue, you know, we're concerned that it'll end up in the court system. So right now, our position is that we want the initiative, the governor's initiative to pass.
Well, how about the alternative that they cancel each other out and people try to vote for one or the other, but neither gets enough votes to pass?
That is a strong reality, and I think that's where the governor, and we support him in his efforts of really trying to reach out and say, okay, let's focus on this initiative. Mm-hmm. The reality is this initiative must pass. If education's on life support, and it looks like someone's getting ready to pull the plug on the life support machine at this point, if the initiative fails.
If it passes, I mentioned this 16% increase to public school funding. Can you get excited about it?
Well, that's a good point. We need to clarify that. If the initiative passes, there is no new money for education. The governor has used that money that would be coming in to buy down deferrals, money that should be coming this year, but they've spent it out over a couple of a year.
Oh.
And so there is not going to be money for new programs or other things. It really, at best, I believe, and Shannon, correct me if I'm wrong, we're flat funded. At best.
This is such an important point to make. And as he says, a 16% increase. So, Shannon, your perspective on it?
Well, I think that it goes back to a point that we were talking about earlier, which is the public perception of what's going on with education funding. And so they hear politicians saying, oh, we're going to fully fund Prop 98. We're going to have a 16% increase. Well, there are lots of things that can go on while they can still say Prop 98 is being fully funded. For example, a deferral where they say we're going to allow you to spend 100% of the money, but we'll reimburse you next year. We're also being currently deficited. We're being paid 79 cents on the dollar. The third thing that's been a budget trick has been certain services that used to be provided by other entities are now being brought into public education, like mental health. So a service that used to be provided to students out of a different fund is now being paid for out of education with no increase. So it sounds like over and over again, education's being fully funded. We're meeting our Prop 98 requirements. And all you have to do is talk to anyone in the system for the reality that we are, as Glenn said, we are on life support at this point.
I know you each want to make probably a final point, but I really want you to say to the listener right now, what should a parent do? What should someone in the school district or voter in the state do? What do you want them to do?
The one thing we can't do, Beth, is fight each other over limited resources. And that means parents within a school community asking for this as opposed to another school community. That also means that unions cannot be fighting with the district.
Management. Shannon, you're nodding as he says that.
This is an opportunity for us to. Oh, you notice how I jumped in real quick about that? Because while we don't always agree, we agree that if we don't work together, what will happen to those students seated in our classrooms right now?
Well, the reason I was nodding is because of the second part of what he said, which is about working together. So if districts come in and in a very paternalistic way say to their labor groups, here's what we're going to do, and this is what's best, without engaging their labor partners in conversation about what priorities are, then I think that's why a lot of districts end up in a position where they're fighting.
Well, you said earlier, and you framed it management to labor, who's at the table and who's on the menu. But maybe what I'm hearing you say is, in terms of that comparison, management and labor are at the table. We just don't want the kids to be on the menu.
I think that that is a very good summary. And so my final point to the listeners would be that there's a lot of rhetoric out there. And I'm telling you, from someone who's spent their life caring about kids, it is critical that first we pass this initiative, the governor's initiative, and second, we start having honest conversations about what we really want from education and then talking about other ways to fund what we believe in.
And we both want to thank you for the opportunity just to share our perspective. We want to, I think the one thing that parents can be, just be involved and be aware. Most parents are very happy at what's happening on in their own public school and in the classrooms. There are extraordinary things happening across the state, and in particular San Juan Unified. We want to build on those successes as we move forward.
Well, I want to thank you both, Superintendent Glenn Thompson, with the district since 2009, but brand new to the fully-fledged superintendent's job. You have a big job ahead of you. And Shannon Brown, we should probably congratulate you. You were San Juan's 2011 Teacher of the Year.
She was.
And Edison, after having a lot of years with you, is very proud to have you in this role. So thank you both. I'm going to leave everybody with something that's actually on the district homepage, and it's from the Good to Great book, which a lot of people are very familiar with.
Right.
But I think he must be one of your favorite authors. But it says, confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, whatever they might be. That's where you are today, isn't it?
Correct. All thank right. you, Beth.
Thank you both for much. Joining us on Insight. You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. Coming up, to own or rent a home? That is the question.